Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this Ask Alan Harriet teleconference. We're so glad you're here. I'm Randy Sanop, your host and moderator, and I have a few announcements to get to before we get started. This call is being sponsored by Quantum Touch Incorporated as a free service exclusively for your benefit. The live call is free, and the replay of the call will be available free as soon as the call is over. The purpose of the calls are to give you monthly access to the leaders in the Quantum Touch organization so that you can get to know them personally and ask your most pressing questions about your healing work and development as the world-class healers you are. Alan is excited to answer your questions today, but there's no way we can get to the hundreds of questions that come in for each call. Alan has selected today's questions from ones that have poured in, and I hope your question is in there. If not, please type it into the question box on the webcast page so that we can add it to the question file we go through before each call. This is a very important step because without you and your fabulous questions, we wouldn't have anything to talk about. So thank you for listening and participating. Okay, let's get to it. And now it's my honor and privilege to introduce you to Alan Harriet. Alan's focus and passion has been his involvement in the healing arts for over 30 years. As a yoga instructor, he began the path to self-discovery through deep meditation and contemplation. His path led him through many diverse and fun things before becoming a Qigong healer and teacher in 1995. He was head Qigong instructor for Southwest Acupuncture College in Santa Fe, New Mexico for 3 years. Since moving to Talent, Oregon and discovering Quantum Touch, he's been writing, offering private sessions, teaching, and evolving the Quantum Touch process with his wife, Jody. Alan has an amazing ability to see energy move and function in the body, but more importantly, he's able to guide students' awareness of this energy movement in their bodies, thus giving them accurate reference points to work from. This skill is what makes him such a wonderful teacher. While Alan's recent focus is the core work, he continues to explore and experiment with consciousness and self-awareness. So, Alan, are you there?
Yes, I sure am.
Hi, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Oh, my pleasure, and thank you for making it possible.
Very good. You're welcome. And thank you for everyone for showing up for this. This is excellent. Okay, it looks like we have a really good audience here with the webcast. People are excited to talk to you, Alan, and hear from you. And we have a list of questions, and we're going to have to wiggle to get it all done. So the first question actually comes from me, because I've pondered this, and I've actually thought about asking you this question, Alan, but I never have quite got around to it. So the first question is, when did you first notice that you could see energy, and what did you do after that first noticing? What changes happened in your life after that?
Well, let me preface by saying I've sort of always been a feeler of energy, and that most people have a perceptive level that's active until they're 6 or 7 years old. And at this age, most people buy into the enculturation of, you know, the society they're growing up in. If you grew up in a society where it was okay to perceive energy, you would have continued to perceive energy. But most people's cultures say, oh, colors around people, or feeling what's going on with others, or having a deep knowingness about what's going to happen isn't okay. So most people start shutting it off at that age. The one that didn't get shut off in me was feeling. So I, you know, everybody just says, oh, he's a sensitive boy.
Hmm.
So I know I was a sensitive boy, as the saying goes, until, late high school, I started exploring in general consciousness. And, you know, it wasn't very organized at, you know, say I'm going to date myself here in 1966, but it was the beginning of exploration. And so I tried a whole bunch of different things. And then around 1970-ish, 1971, I got involved in yoga. And I had friends that could see energy, and they didn't really understand it, but they talked about colors around people and everything. And I said, well, that's just weird, but I wonder if I can do it too. So as I got further into yoga, what I did is I oriented my meditations. I guess you wouldn't call them strict meditations. You call them more contemplations, wondering about seeing energy or the perception of energy from a visual perspective. And I just, you know, I'd spend, anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour each day meditating on that. Some days I'd skip, sure, but that was sort of my average protocol before I did my my asanas at the time, or movements. And after about a year and a half, I started to see kind of this little glow around people, and it was kind of pastel-y and colorful, and it seemed to change a lot, and I didn't understand it either at the time, what it meant, but I'd started to see color. So that's how I got, you know, sort of started with the whole thing.
Well, that's excellent, and thank you for sharing that with us. So it was in your late teens or early 20s that you started doing that meditation?
Meditation, early 20s, yeah.
Early 20s. Okay. Yeah. And with the work that you do now, you can help people accelerate that process a little bit?
Yeah, I actually do a retreat where we work on that as a specific focus for about half of the time that we spend together for that 5 days. But I do private coaching in it too. If people want to refine their abilities, I set that up as well. So there's a number of options.
Oh, and, you know, yeah. It never occurred to me that you would do private coaching to help people perceive energy better.
Oh yeah, I work at whatever people want to work on. You know, as long as I know how to do it.
Okay, so if they wanted to get a hold of you, they could just email alan@quantumtouch.com.
Correct.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
I tend to book out about a week in advance, but yes. I answer the emails as quick as I can.
Oh, that's excellent. You're only booked out about a week or two in advance?
Yeah,
okay.
On an average.
Excellent. So someone could get in to see you pretty quickly then.
If that was their desire, definitely.
Excellent. Okay, question number two is actually a three-part question. It comes from Doris in Kentucky. And she, number one is, how does one develop the ability to see into the body to know what is creating the illness or where is the stuck energy?
Well, there is a twofold answer. The simplest answer is, in the core transformation course that we teach,
mm-hmm.
We teach you how to make your body quiet. And in the process of making your body quiet, it's easier to sense stuck stuff that's overactive, and stuff that travels in what you'd call directions that just feel wrong. And so within that course, from a feeling perspective, you could say it's actually taught there, because we'll teach you to sense flows through the body, where the flows are held up, why they're being held up is a little more complex, but you can sense where they are, and we'll teach you, you know, whether you're using just a basic QT or the core work. You could work on it from either perspective once you recognize where it's stuck. And then a lot of times you'll also feel if there's an emotion in there with it. Again, this is all from more of a feeling perspective, but a lot of people get visuals that go along with it. So from the perspective of the core work, that's there. And then, you know, there's always more refining one can do to one's abilities, but we give you the basics. Then beyond that, the key word they used was, how does one develop the ability to see? Well, the seeing comes more when you, let's say that you feel it and you wonder, say, what does that look like? In the act of wondering what it looks like, you begin to ask the question that's going to cause the visual to show up. You see, most people, as perceivers, think that seeing is, if you see, you want to feel. Let's put it that way. If you feel, you want to see. If you taste energy, you want to be able to hear it. If you can hear it, you know, it's like the grass is always greener right on the other side, and there's six basic ways to perceive energy, all of which are equally sound. And they're the five physical senses plus the knowing sense. Those are your standard ways to perceive energy. So part of it is just knowing what the signals are that you're headed in the right direction. So the core work actually is oriented towards that, because one of the key questions we were using to create that class was, that people kept asking, well, how can I sense into a body to know what's going on? And that is a really good way. It tends to the feeling end of things, but it also produces visuals, especially if you choose to work on it a bit and orient your desire to perceive in that direction. So that's the simplest way. The next way is more involved, getting the mind quiet. And again, by getting the mind quiet, you're basically reducing activity in yourself. Then when you look at someone, letting things come to you versus reaching, mostly because when you reach, you mess with someone else's energy field to some degree, which gives you a comparatively inaccurate read. And third, not having a deep emotional attachment to what you're perceiving, because when you do that, you tend to block yourself. Those are the key ways. So detaching is good then. Pardon me?
Being detached is good.
Being detached with a curiosity.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You still have to have a desire at some level,
uh-huh.
An intent.
Uh-huh. And then that third question of Doris is, how do you prepare yourself beforehand to create a healing in a client? Did you answer that already?
No, didn't answer that.
Oh, good.
How I do that... Well, first of all, let me say when I first get up in the morning, I usually do some meditation and I practice my Qigong. Those are my morning practices. That's something I do every day assuming I'm not up at 4 a.m. or something to catch a plane. And so I guess you could say already prepped.
So you do that first thing in the morning to prep.
Yeah, that's just my day, you know. I mean, some people can kind of do it any time during the day. And I will, you know, I certainly can, but it tends to be if I don't do it first thing in the morning, I just get involved in my day and don't get to it.
Ah.
So I do that, and then I answer my emails, et cetera, and then I just get quiet before the client comes and start the work and, you know, listening to what they had to say or maybe pre-reading the email prior to the session because the majority of my work is long distance.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
So you can just kind of focus in the direction of what you're doing so that your mind is quiet and focused when the call starts or when the healing session starts.
Right, right. And when I, you know, just like, it, let's say I was going to work with you over the phone, I just put my attention lightly on you and I let myself soften and quiet and then I start get pictures, whether they're visual, mental, knowingness or feeling wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm off and going, but understand I've been doing this quite a while. So a lot of things that are sort of autopilot for me used to be a little more involved. I used to have to sort of ramp myself up so I spend a little more time in meditation, maybe 5 minutes or so before each client.
Aha. So this is something that anyone can learn to do.
Definitely.
Excellent.
It's just a question of desire and mm-hmm. practice.
And practice.
You know, yeah, the key thing is practice, giving yourself permission.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's especially good news. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Question number three comes from Karen in Nova Scotia. She says, it has been said that 90% of physical toxicity is emotionally based. If this is the case, is there a cohesive strategy to encompass both the physical and emotional trauma using QT, supercharging, and core all in the same session?
Okay, so let's start with defining QT, supercharging, and core a little bit.
Okay.
QT is the basic work, sweeping and breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Supercharging is the same thing, sweeping and breathing, with more techniques and understanding how the flows move better through your body so you're more efficient. Core is working on a client from the other side of the entrainment coin. Instead of building up resonance and adding energy, we're making our system very quiet. And when we touch a person, they, in effect, are us. And we unwind ourselves, and in the process, they shift. So you can approach any healing from either direction the more QT supercharging, I'll call that more yang, or the more quiet core. Now, that said, the question was the emotional material. You can approach the emotional material from either the more yang approach or the more yin approach, the more QT supercharging or the more core. Now, what I will often have them do, if the person comes to me and it's obvious that there's an emotional aspect to the work, I'll have them feel the emotions as much as they can, whatever's being presented, while I work on them. First of all, this tends to bring up in their field. Did you have a question?
No.
No. Oh, okay. This tends to bring up in their field those energy anomalies that are associated with the problem. So I'll work on the energy anomalies in their field that I perceive with the energy work. Or if you don't do that, if you don't perceive what's in a field, whether physically, emotionally, more visually or more kinesthetically in response, what I would do is just send in the energy while they're thinking that, if you're using yang, or I would use more wombing on the whole person and make space that way, or wherever I was attracted to, if it was a particular spot, so that the emotions being on display would get more directly affected. So regardless of the model you use to affect the emotional trauma is on display because the client is allowing themselves to feel the emotion. And then in the supercharging, of course, we have specific techniques for the emotions. And in the core two, we have specific techniques for the emotions. But if you don't know them, it doesn't mean you can't affect them. It's just it's less direct. But it certainly does affect them simply by having the client feel the emotions that are on display. There you go.
Okay. It seems like it would be tricky to try and use the yin and the yang techniques all in the same session, but it can be done, right?
Definitely. And it's not that you're trying to use them in the same moment, though you can, but that is quite tricky.
Mm-hmm.
It's that you would say use some QT and supercharging, or basic and supercharging,
uh-huh,
or yang for a little while,
uh-huh,
and then switch over to core for a little while. In other words, like think of it like priming a pump. You have a handle that goes up and it causes a suction. You push down and it sucks the energy back up, so to speak, or the water back up. So in the case of the core, it would open the area and make it more accepting, if you will. And then you would add with the more yang. Or you could do all yin, or you could do all yang. But the two together are a nice balancing act, if you will, of adding and opening, adding and opening, adding and opening. And some people, you know, will do that every few breaths changeover. So it's certainly supportable between using both in a session.
Oh, that's excellent. I'll try that later today.
All right, let me know how it works.
I will. Okay, question number four is two people have asked a question that's similar. Nicole in Venice and Beatrice in Toronto. Nicole says she gets temporary knee pain relief when she does her own QT sessions, but she wants to know how to make it permanent. And Beatrice says she's heard that QT heals scoliosis. Is this healing permanent? So there's a very permanent aspect to these questions.
Well, permanent is always relative. You can do a healing on, say, a knee, and you get temporary relief. Now, the question is, are you going, say that you've got a lot of pain, and when you do the healing, it allows you to maybe go out and dig in the garden. And because you feel good, you do more than you would normally do than when you're in pain. So first off, you're not giving yourself a little time for the healing to sort of settle. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like I usually like a person to go for a stroll after a healing. Just kind of helps to set the changes and drink some water. I always find that extremely useful. And I don't mean a hard walk. I mean a stroll.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of let things settle in. And then see how you feel. And build into your work bit by bit, sort of test the waters rather than jumping off the roof. That said, let's suppose you do the work on your knee and it just keeps coming back a few days later. Well, first of all, my first question would be, are you working to completion? In other words, are you just sending the energy until the ache is gone? Or are you sending in the energy until the hands are no longer hot or tingling? And if you're doing that and it's still coming back, I would note the emotion involved there, and I would send it in while I'm feeling the emotion.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make that seem like an understandable answer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, like, for scoliosis, okay, who's the healer is the number one question, the client.
Mm-hmm.
Is the healing permanent? Often it is permanent. However, if there is a lot of issues around, emotional issues around why the back has scoliosis to start with, then it may take a number of sessions to stay for the body to get used to the new state and accept the new state in comfort rather than worried about how somebody is going to refer to them or what they'll make them do because their back no longer is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the answer is yes, in general, the healing is permanent. Of course, you can always re-injure yourself, but in general, once it's straight, it tends to stay straight. But the number of sessions to achieve that are unique to the individual. And not everybody has 100% effectiveness here. However, I would say 80% of the population does get a definite degree of improvement, and a lot of them quite complete.
Well, thank you for that. That's excellent. I've been thinking
You're
about
welcome.
the scoliosis and the permanent. How many times, you know, should I schedule them for months or, you know, so.
Yeah, that's a good question, really. There's some people that specialize in scoliosis. And they say somewhere their average is 5 to 10 sessions, depending on the severity of the scoliosis. And I mean, if you've got a minor shift with only 2 or 3 vertebrae involved, well, that's probably a session, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got, say, a 30-degree shift, where you know they're just at the that's the cutoff point where the allopathic medicine model wants to put Harrington rods in your back to straighten it because you're beginning to crush internal organs with that amount of severity of angle in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So those tend to take a bit longer. And a lot of it's because the client expects it to take longer rather than it having to take longer. Richard will tell the story of working on this older woman that was quite bent over, and he worked on her once, and she just straightened right up, you know, and his jaw dropped because she just accepted. She had no preconceived notions, hadn't a clue really what he was doing. It was more like at the daughter's request kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she just got better and stayed that way. Other people, it'll take a number of sessions. So there you go.
That's excellent. Noelle in the Netherlands, she says her mother has a vertebrae in her lower back that stands out of alignment a few centimeters. It shows clearly on x-rays, and she's had it for years. But lately it's starting to hurt more and more, and she's been walking bent over for years now. She said, is it possible to bring this vertebrae back into alignment with QT? And if so, do this without damaging anything else?
The key words, I think, for her are without damaging anything else.
Yes.
Very much true. Yes, you can do it without damaging anything else because the body's intelligence doesn't go to more aberration. It goes to more balance. So as you produce the energy to correct the issue or allow the area to spontaneously align, it actually is working on many more levels than simply drawing that vertebra back into alignment. It is working on releasing the muscles around it, balancing the other vertebra along the path of the energy of where it needs to be straightened in order to not be a problem. It's probably working on the discs as well, because when a vertebra pops out like that, the discs are under stress.
Mm-hmm.
And then bit by bit, you see, it'll probably happen gradually because it's a very old injury, but it doesn't have to be that way. But it'll probably happen gradually, and what will happen is the woman will begin to straighten up with her back, which will put less stress on the lumbar area. Because when you're all hunched over, the lumbar vertebrae get popped out pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
So the more she gradually straightens up, the less pressure there's going to be on this area as well. And when you work on that vertebra, don't think that's the only vertebra that you need to address. Be sure and align the hips for level, because you need a good foundation in the body. The hips should always be leveled first, and the occiput should also be leveled, because it's like having the foundation of a house and a roof of a house. If either one is out of balance, it's going to throw that whole column out of harmony.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're attracted to the vertebra that's really popped out, but the stress is along the whole spine. So really you want to work the whole spine. This too will cause the area to begin to balance more evenly throughout the back, so that the whole column comes into straightness, putting even pressure on each portion of the back and allowing the muscles in the back to relax and the tendons to come back into proper elasticity as well, so that it can hold all those changes.
Mm, that's great. I got a quick question here that has to do with this very subject. We were just talking about the Harrington rods and the surgically fused spine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, James in Salt Lake City said, what if we're working on someone that has that? Is there any precautions that we should look out for?
I've never found any precautions, no. We've had people, you know, in the classes with Harrington rods, for instance, and they just do wonderful with the work. I haven't had anybody disappear their Harrington rods yet, but I'm willing.
Well, yeah, it's great. He also wants to know if the QT will unfuse a fused vertebrae.
If that is in the client's highest interest, the answer is yes. Not always, you know, what we view as whole, their body may not view as whole. Maybe they'll just have incredible elasticity, even though they have some fused vertebra.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's what the body will choose as the healing. If your desire is, and both of your desires is, to have that disc, that the fused area rebuild, then yeah. In my experience, this tends to be slow to rebuild, you know, structure, particularly that's been pinned or otherwise with an external metal of some sort, or, you know, some sort of artificial something. But we have had some people that have had quite marked improvement. Yeah, that's possible.
Great. Okay, well, that pretty much covers that section. The next one is a three-part question that Veronica in New Jersey, Betty in Florida, and Samar in Michigan, they have specific questions on working on people with Parkinson's. Or if there's if you can help cancer patients remotely or hands-on, and are there testimonials for cancer? And have you ever treated diseases like diabetes, and is there a special routine for treating such a disease? So these are specific condition questions.
Mm-hmm. Super. Well, let me start with Veronica, because that was the first one you asked.
Yes, Parkinson's.
That's correct. All right. Well, Parkinson's, in my experience, has a lot to do with heavy metal toxicity in the system.
Oh.
And it's not all heavy metals, but, you know, aluminum as well. So the body stores that, the brain gets overloaded by it, and it starts to produce the Parkinson's-like symptoms. So first, let me preface all this by saying I would do a chelation therapy of some sort, either by having that as an intention with sending in the energy. A lot of people, or at least a few people that I've met, like to send energy in through the feet to kind of chelate the system energetically. But I would also follow it up with any of the external things like, you'd have to do an internet search, but the ones I'm familiar with are chaparral, the herb chaparral, as a T. There's stuff called NCDs, which are natural cellular defense product. Tends to leach out the heavy metals from the system. And there's a third one, my personal favorite, is oil pulling. I suggest going to oilpulling.com and reading about that. It's really good for your teeth, too. But it tends to leach out the heavy metals from your system. So to me, this is a two-pronged assault, not a simple assault by just energy, just to make it as fast as possible.
Okay.
And then when working on Parkinson's, I send into the brain, if I'm doing more yang, and or into the nervous system to help rebuild and balance. Mostly into the brain because it tends to be brain problem. That's where the heavy metals tend to accumulate for that, at least in my experience. The working on people that have had Parkinson's, I've had mixed results because a lot of times what happens is they're older, it's more a child, you know, one of their children that has requested the work for them. And the person themselves that has it isn't as interested in change just because they're very set in their ways. They don't want to buy different, they want to keep cooking with their aluminum pots because they like them. Or, you know, in other words, they continue to pollute the system. So it's a little bit two steps forward, one step back kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to work in the brain, and if I was using more core, it would be wombing work. And if it was basic or supercharging, I'd just send it into the brain and target wherever I'm attracted to or be guided by, feeling the pain. Or you can also, like if they have a nervous, an arm movement or something that goes along with Parkinson's where the nervous disorder shows up, you can start... symptomatically and work your way up to the brain.
Okay.
That's how I deal with Parkinson's cancer. Well, remotely or hands-on, to me is equal. It doesn't matter if you're present or if they're far away. There is only distance in the mind's view, not in actuality. In energy, everything is connected to everything. And as I like to say in the core work, there is no out there, out there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is interconnected. So distance is not an issue. And again, you work in the area where the tumors are, or like, if it's cancer of the liver, well, then send energy into the liver. You can also send energy into the lymphatic system to bolster their immune system. You can send it into the heart area to help deal with emotional issues. And I would say that for all of these, Parkinson's, cancer, or diabetes, a lot of these things have emotional issues. So send them into the heart center, into the heart chakra area to help balance and heal the emotions associated with it. If they know they've got a lot of emotions around it, have them feel the emotions as you work. It helps to target the emotions associated with it. But cancer, I tend to work in the area that is of interest. For instance, say it's breast cancer. You work in the area where the tumor is, and you just send in the energy. Now, some people like to send it into the tissue all around it and leave the spot alone. Other people like to send it right at the cancer itself. I found that both work extremely well. I haven't found a positive or negative one way or another. With the core work, you're sort of surrounding the area anyway and opening it, so it's a different approach. But both work extremely well. As far as testimonials go, there's some of those on the Quantum Touch website. I can give you a few examples from my own work. Again, remember, the client is the healer here, and that I'll preface this by saying a lot of people don't turn to alternative until the allopathic model or the conventional model has failed them. So you seldom, or at least I seldom, get people at the first stages. I get people at the advanced stages. So, and a lot of times they're getting chemo or radiation while I'm working. Now, I always tell people to do what feels right to them. Is diet an issue? Absolutely. Is attitude and emotional state an issue? Absolutely. Is the severity of the situation an issue? Yes, but it doesn't have to be absolutely. In other words, the area often responds very well to the energy, and there's a lot of change. I worked with one woman, for example, that had breast cancer, and it was a very aggressive type, so she went in one day to find out she had it, and within a week she was scheduled for chemo. And about halfway through it, she called and wanted some work done. Now, they were doing checkups on the lump regularly, and I started working, and the lump decreased in size very rapidly. And I'm not, you know, it's not like you have to come to me. Many people are having these kinds of results. The lump responded very quickly, and in this case, they're prior to my working with it, the lymph nodes were also involved in the cancer. Like I said, it was a very aggressive cancer. And we worked, and it felt to me like things were clearing radically. And I suggested, because she was scheduled for surgery as soon as the chemo sessions were over, and I suggested she have a second, you know, biopsy to see where things were at prior to surgery, because once they start taking out lymph nodes, everything is more compromised immune system-wise, and you've mm-hmm. got, you know, lymphedema and all that becomes an issue. So anyway, she, because of the cost and everything and the kind of health insurance she had, she did not choose to have a second biopsy done. When they did the operation, there was nothing in the breast as far as cancer. There was just a little liquid. And they removed 12 lymph nodes, and not a one of them had any cancer in it.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, this is all anecdotal in the sense it's just what I'm told and what I've experienced. We haven't done any hardcore research on that level. It's just too expensive to do that kind of research. We'd love to, but nobody's given us that $3 to $5 million yet. There was a doctor that place that was in one of the newsletters within the last 6 months or so that is a cancer specialist, and he used quantum touch on a woman with breast cancer that opted not to go the route of the standard chemo surgery method, and he did quantum touch one time, and the lump reduced by half. And what was fun was she was scheduled for a thermography, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Where they find the cancers by the heat they produce. She was due for an evaluation of that sort, like the next day after he'd done the work. So one day they had a thermography, it was 2.5 centimeters. He did the work. The next day they did the thermography and the guy didn't know that she'd opted not to do the chemo, and the lump had reduced by half. And what he put on the chart was, chemo seems to be being effective.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, as I say, it's anecdotal, but yes, we have had good results, and from descriptions from many people, yes.
Very good.
I would say that things are good.
And how are we doing with diabetes?
Diabetes? Well, it's the pancreas, right, in most cases. If it's type 1 diabetes, where it's actually a reduction of insulin in the body rather versus type 2, that's an acquired thing through age or, overweight causing an over-taxing of the system that produces it. If it's genetic in base, I would include the pancreas where I send energy, and even if I didn't know what genes to work on, I would have an intention of sending the energy to the genes to help change the genetic structure so that it can balance and heal the diabetes. So two-pronged again, well, actually three-pronged, I would also check diet, and I'm sure most people that are diabetic are already oriented towards that. But things like, especially type 2, these are just suggestions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Things like cinnamon is very good as a tea.
Ooh.
Of course, check all this out with a physician. That's your standard disclaimer. But there's indications that it's very effective for this. It helps to balance sugars in the body. So, you know, I love just doing the energy work, but if I know something would also help someone, I encourage them to use those other things as well, herbs or anything from their doctor. If they feel the need for that, I encourage it 100%, because when their attitude is that they're doing everything possible to help themselves, they begin to relax. And as they reduce the stress overall to their system, the body can really do what it does best, which is heal itself. So I always, you know, a broader approach. I can do the work well with just energy work, but if the idea of taking a cinnamon tea or something appeals to the person, then I encourage them to get okay from their doctor, and then watch their insulin, of course, because that'll change things. But I've had medium results with the diabetes. A lot of people don't want to change their diet. A lot of people are happy where they're at and just want to manage it. So sometimes what I've gotten is a reduction in the amount of insulin. And then a lot of times what happens when they see that things are working well, diabetes, in my experience, tend to be a gradual improvement. So they'll come and take a class, and they'll start working on themselves and continue the process. So I don't always get to hear the final result of how things go. But I'm a firm believer in empowering others to heal themselves. So I'm always very excited and pleased when a person chooses to go further that way and broaden their ability to help themselves and others.
Well, and that also gives them more education to be able to get a many-leveled approach to their healing, instead of
That's
just
right.
turning their power over and saying to somebody else, whether it's you or a doctor, to heal
Indeed.
Me.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent point.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, the next little section is also three questions in a row, but they're about children, and I put them in a little separate category because I don't know if we're going to have time, Alan, to get to our whole list here, but I hope so. But these three I really like. Miklos in Romania says he's got a 7-year-old son with Down syndrome. He has the QT book in Romanian, and can QT help Down syndrome? Then we have Beatrice in Ontario again. Can Quantum Touch work on people with autism? And Anne in Rosemere says, can QT help improve children's academic results, concentration problems, and lack of motivation? So this is the kids' corner.
All right, super.
Uh-huh.
Well, first we'll start with Down syndrome.
Okay.
Okay, that's a genetic scenario. So, again, two-pronged approach. Number one, send in the energy to affect the genes that are Down syndrome specific. You don't need to know genetic structure and chemistry and biochemistry and all that to operate at that level. Have your intent to affect the genetic structure. And the genetic structure is in every cell, so it doesn't have to be specific where you touch. Your intention is to affect the genetic level. The other is of course, the mental ability, et cetera, of the person, and sending energy into the brain to balance the brain and harmonize the chemistry involved there to get optimum efficiency of what they do have. And I would also send into the heart area, again, for any conditions associated with emotions that may have shown up relative to it all. So I haven't worked with a lot of Down syndrome myself. I've worked with other genetic imbalances. They tend to be gradual, and my best efficiency has been working at the genetic level. And do understand that as the child changes and becomes what we call more normal, they're going to start exhibiting more normal tendencies, which is to question authority. Uh-huh. If they're, especially if they're teenagers.
Uh-huh.
So don't be surprised if there's some assertion of who they are versus just kind of going along with things. Though, of course, I'm sure there's up days and down days for anybody. Do understand as the child normalizes, they're going to want to start doing things that normal children do, and you're going to have to, that's something you may have to deal with. So whenever I work with genetic work, I always tell the client that don't be surprised if things are changing here. And if that's upsetting you, then send yourself some energy.
There you go.
To help deal with that, because, uh-huh, you know, they're going to become more everyday people and all the associations that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
For autism,
uh-huh,
I send energy into the brain and the heart. Also, when I've looked at autistic children, looking at their energy isn't single. In other words, most people have a line of energy that to me looks white, that goes through the middle of the body, upwards through the head. And if you look for a connection to the ultimate spirit or the higher self, it goes right up to it. With autistic children, and I'm going to say, we'll state this beyond that, with people with multiple personality disorder, bipolar disorder, any number of those kinds of things where there's a major shift in personality, this occurs as well, some more than others, what I'm about to describe. Instead of having one line coming up of energy connecting to the infinite self, if you will, there are multiple lines going out. And they don't connect well to any one infinite self. They connect to different aspects or different personality experiences. And so when they, in a sense, when they're downloading the information to be, in other words, to learn to walk and talk and interact with people, they have too many bits of information to deal with, and it shuts them down. So you'd want to send in an energy to balance, in a sense, soul retrieval kind of work, you could say. In Core 2, we have some techniques that are good for this sort of thing, where you draw a person back in, we call it. But not even if you don't know that, you can still send an energy with that intention, which tends to flavor the work and augment that as a possibility. So is it slower if you're general? Yes. Is a miracle that takes weeks instead of days better than the other? Well, it's a call, right? And I can't say that we've returned a child from autism to normalcy in days. But I will say it's a gradual process in general, and it takes a number of times by to get those multiple connections to start harmonizing towards one, so that one point of view is the dominant point of view, so that they can be more normal, if you will.
And again, you'd go through the stages of becoming normal with the acting out rebellion. Perhaps.
Well, autism is pretty weird anyhow, unfortunately. You get a lot of unusual behavior. But, they'll start to be themselves, exactly. They'll start mm-hmm. to be regular folks. And let's say they're 13 and they're centered for the first time. And they find out that there's hormones driving them bananas. Yeah, there's going to be some issues. But at least there'll be issues that are average rather than aberrant or considered aberrant.
Uh-huh.
For academic results, et cetera, yeah, there has been some work done with that that works quite well. And it's usually, again, sending energy into the brain and into the heart, because a lot of what causes concentration problems and lack of motivation is emotional issues. So by sending it into the heart region, you start to deal with that very nicely. There was a woman in Seattle, up towards Everett area, somewhere in there. She's a social worker, and she worked with kids with behavioral problems, actually, they weren't necessarily slow, but they certainly a lot of them lacked motivation. And they probably had a lot of concentration issues. And what she found is that when she sent energy to these kids, you know, while she was working with them, she would think of them and send energy. And a lot of them were on Ritalin or on different drugs to ameliorate their aberrant behavior, shall we say.
Yes.
And they found they could decrease the amount of drug they were giving them by half and some completely. It depended a little bit how long she'd worked with them. But, yeah, she had major results that way.
Wow.
And, you know, offering with a calm, loving intent is absolutely critical for this type of thing,
mm-hmm.
Especially with people that are already in agitation or disharmony with themselves. The loving intent is really a very positive way to work. So the short answer is yes, it can help concentration and lack of motivation, sending into the heart and into the brain again.
Boy, I wish I'd have known that when my kids were young. They both would have used this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's never too late, is it?
No, it never
time
is.
Time is a made-up thing. Okay, the next question kind of goes into this disharmony mode. This is Barbara in Minnesota. She says she was in an accident in February. The sacrum was broken in two places. The right hand, wrist, and arm are injured. She's in pain temporarily in these areas, although healing beautifully but slowly. Can she effectively use the Quantum Touch Healing Facilitator for others when her body's in such a state of disharmony right now?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it would even aid her to do it, because it's going to cause the healing in her own body to work faster. Because whenever you give a healing, you get a healing, whether it's yin or yang. It's always causing shift. And because of that, the area will heal faster, you'll have less pain in the areas, and the energy just moves, or if it can't get through an area completely, it'll just move around it, so the flow will be established. Might it be a little tiny bit less effective? Maybe. But not enough that you're going to anything to worry about. Energy will find a way. Your intent and your love will have ultimate impact. And so, yes, I would offer with abandon and just enjoy.
And so we never have to worry about if we're in the right mood or the right physical condition to offer this love energy and the healing energy to anyone.
That's right.
I love that. That's excellent. Okay, the next questions, we might be able to get to all of them. They're about feeling energy. Sherry in Texas says she's taken a basic Quantum Touch video workshop, but she can't feel the energy. Is there anything she can do to help her feel the energy?
Well, the simplest way is probably, well, some basic exercises. You rub your hands together till they feel warm. You hold them maybe, an inch apart, and you very slowly move them towards each other, and you start to look for a magnetic-like sensation of something being held apart lightly. It's subtle, okay? That's the best way to just start feeling energy in general. You know, we're considering, I'm in the process of designing a course that may be done online. We're still trying to iron it all out, where I teach this kind of thing on a large scale. So that's also an option in the future. But you can play with feeling sensitivity relative to yourself, your own energy field, what it feels like, feeling it on others once you start to feel it on yourself. And then when you sweep and breathe, linking, and this is really a good thing to do, linking visualization with kinesthetic awareness. So remember, in the basic class, they have you rub the leg lightly and remember what that feels like, and then see if you can make it stronger from memory. That's a way to increase your ability to sense it as well. And then visualize as your hand strokes up, you know, maybe it looks like a color white as you come up. Maybe it's a line of energy that vibrates. However you want to imagine it, we'll link it. It's a common experience that when you link feeling and visualization, that it increases your ability to perceive. And It's not so, I would say it's not that you can't feel the energy, it's that you're not sure what energy might feel like, so you're not sure if you're getting the right signal. And number two, probably at some level, you could feel it and you've blocked it, so it's more a case of relearning than not being able to. So the visualization, the feeling the energy between the hands, the stroking the body and augmenting that feeling and then having a visualization that goes along with it will tend to make the area more obviously available for you to start feeling energy in general. And it's a question of gradual improvement.
Excellent. And this last one is about Michelle in Port Washington says she gets dizzy or lightheaded type symptoms when she runs energy. And what does she need to do different?
It sounds like you might be hyperventilating.
Yeah.
In which case, I would slow the breathing down. There's a tendency to want to do really well, so you try really hard and you breathe really deep. And, yeah, you're going to get dizzy and lightheaded. So do this sitting down for a while, please. And just slow your breathing down. Try maybe a 4-4 or even a 6-6. When you first start, and not trying to overfill your lungs, like you can have a very deep breath and then sending out very deep breath. And if you do that once or twice, you're going to start to feel lightheaded and dizzy. Slow it down.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Breathe through the nose instead of the mouth.
Uh-huh.
So you won't be able to get as much air. And don't worry about filling the lungs to that extreme amount and emptying the lungs to the extreme amount. Relax, be playful with yourself.
I do a breathing exercise that I've been doing actually for the last 3 or 4 years. First thing in the morning while I'm still in bed, I take as much air as I can into my lungs to really stretch them out and hold it for a minute and then let it out really slow. And I do that about 10 times. And that's really increased the capacity, and I can run energy for hours.
There you go. And you'll notice that you were doing it laying down in bed.
Yes.
So if you got lightheaded or dizzy in the beginning.
That's why I did it in bed for a reason.
Yeah, and you don't have to start with 10 breaths. You could start with 1 or 2.
Yes.
And gradually build up. And again, always take care of yourself. All the books, all the self-help techniques, all the teaching in the world is only as good as what you understand about it and what your body can do relative to it. So if it's not working for you, modify how you're relating to the work. Slow the breathing down a little bit. Does it mean you might have to take 10 breaths instead of 3 to affect the same change? Well, maybe in the beginning, but who cares? It's still an amazing experience, and you're always doing good, and you're always getting healing when you do it. So it's a win-win situation.
Oh, that's the best part.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, I think that's going to wrap up for today. We've got just a minute and a half left, so I wanted to just make a quick announcement and tell everybody that the next Ask Quantum Touch teleconference is scheduled for June 18th. And that's when we get to meet Mervyn Foster. He's the fabulous advanced instructor who lives in England and teaches supercharging in Core 1 and 2 all over Europe. Is that correct, Alan?
Yeah, almost Core 2, but yeah, Core
almost
2 will be, he'll be doing that this summer.
Oh, so he's been in training for with you for quite a while.
Yeah, he's done the supercharging and he's got that down super and been teaching that for a few years now. And same with the Core 1, and we were going to do the Core 2 earlier, but this was the first we could get together.
Oh, okay.
So he's got it. He's just got to get his little tiny bits done now.
Just a little tiny bits more. Isn't he wonderful to work with?
Oh, he's a sweetheart of a human being, extremely capable and a great perceiver.
I know. I just love it. Every time I get a chance to talk to him on the phone, even the emails he sends to me are just absolutely heartwarming. I don't know.
Yeah.
With just a few words, he lets me know that he thinks highly of me.
Yeah.
And he does that with everyone.
He's such a caring individual and goes out of his way to make everything work. I really love working with Mervyn.
Oh,
a true gentleman.
So really I'm really nice looking guy. Forward to that interview that we're going to have next month on June 18th.
Right.
And Mervyn is too. He's real excited for his turn to come up to have an interview to talk to everybody. And anyway, so be sure look at keep an eye on the official announcements in the Quantum Touch newsletter and for your webcast length and the date and time. And also on the Quantum Touch message board, I post the announcements so that people can have the links ready. And it'll be the same setup we have now with the webcast page where you ask your question. Mervyn will be calling in from England, so we have to do a test call here pretty soon to make sure we've got all the points are going to match up the way they should. Anyway, Alan, thank you so much for sharing yourself with the QT community these days, and for the every other month, because you're the every other month guy that you're going to for taking your time to do this. This is fabulous.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me having it available for me to do.
And that means we get to see you again in July.
All right.
So
look,
we've got
to it.
And that one will be announced later too. So. Anyway, everybody, thank you so much for being here with us today and for staying for the whole call and for sending in all your fabulous questions and for sharing your time with us today. Alan, everybody, thank you and have a good day. Happy healing.
Thank you. Happy healing to you.
Okay. Bye, all.
Bye-bye now.